This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of ZCNYC. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. This is one phrase from It's All Right, Ma, by Bob Dylan. It's all right, Ma, I'm only bleeding. A question in your nerves is lit, yet you know there is no answer fit to satisfy, ensure you're not to quit, to keep it in your mind and not forget that it is not he or she or them or it that you belong to. The whole song is worth very relevant today. I think he got the whole situation in that one song. A question in your nerves is lit. Of course, this has been the job of Zen teachers and many bodhisattvas on this earth, bodhisattva citizens, being persistent in lighting up questions in the nerves of students and turning up the heat of inquiry. We hear from Dogen, immediately and energetically extinguish the flames on your head and courageously make undaunted effort. At such a time, how do you practice? Do you want to clearly understand this? He says, this questioning is not a matter of the intellect or discriminating consciousness, but questioning that pervades nerves, sinews, muscles, cells, and spine. So Dogen and Dylan are speaking alike. They're going to the inner workings, the inner chamber of inquiry. And today I wanted to look at the nature of inquiry. And I think we all have our way of doing it. Some just are very skeptical and question everything. And we all have our paths into that, some through expression, through art. Music is a way of asking. Different ways that we inquire. And sometimes that has to be lit up. Lit up. Because the inquiry itself is not some, doesn't have a quick answer. It's not some quick answer, but it may be like to be in the light of what Dylan says, there is no answer fit. And I think with the many crises that we are in the midst of, we sit upon an extraordinary demand and actions to be made. And we need to ask questions. We need to change. People can change. The practice of the Dharma is learning how to live. And this is both hard and joyful work, as we know. A path, a practice, life makes extraordinary demands on us, and it requires that we take nothing for granted and that we don't accept anything on faith alone. And that word alone, that word faith is pretty loaded too. But if we do practice with honesty, integrity, and diligence in this way, it will definitely lead us to question everything about ourself. That's what it's meant to do. Who we think we are, our most basic beliefs, even those that we have about the Dharma itself, come into question. So what is inquiry? That's a good question. And like most good questions, sometimes it's really very basic. In a way, authentic inquiry is allowing ourselves to care. It's like if we're asking, it's like we care about something. We want to ask about it. We care. So we take on this, I call it a buoyant burden. It's not a heavy burden, but a buoyant burden of caring. As Dogen said, most of us know what it's like to inquire out of the intellectual interests when we are asking for the sake of asking or because we think we should. And in the end, that might not be taking good care. But when we care about something, it gets inside of us, doesn't it? It gets inside. It pervades the nerves, the sinews, the muscles, and the spine. A question in our nerves is lit. It gets inside the shell that keeps us from being affected and bothered. The shell that keeps anything really new from happening. So in the beginning, to deeply inquire about anything or something, we need to care about it in some way. So it's important to be asking, what do you sincerely care about? And the inquiry, I think, will be most effective if it's personal, not about spiritual teachings all the time, or something that's outside of our own experience. Needs to be something that's coming from the inside and relational to our environment. So what is it that you really care about? What is it that I really care about? What pulls you into here, now, this minute? And I think if we look close enough, we see that we often impose ideas from the outside upon ourselves. I do, and it doesn't always lead to real inquiry. In caring, we enter into a kind of love affair with what we care about. And times it draws us into a state of bliss, perhaps, or rapture. It's just so exciting to care and inquire. And at other times it draws us into confusion. We don't know what to do. We don't know where we're going. We can feel a bit out of control, even though we don't really have much. And it's actually a sign that we're letting caring get under our skin. And when we find this kind of caring, inquiry has some power behind it. It really does. It's like when we enter that love affair with caring, then when we ask, it has some power, right? If it's not really in the sinews and the nerves, it doesn't really have a lot of power. It doesn't go deep. And there's some that are on the surface like that, for sure. And we may also find our own inner integrity. We find something inside that's actually stable, that we take refuge in. That there's a place inside us that is willing to be a little crazy. Crazy enough to take inquiry seriously and hold nothing sacred. By holding nothing sacred, I mean nothing is assumed to be true. And all our assumptions are fair game. So ultimately, our most sacred and unquestioned assumptions about ourselves, others, and life These seem to be the most important to question. Inquiry means it's taking us back to ourself, back to our experience. So it's one of the tools that we have to shake up, to dislodge how we grasp and adhere to unnecessary beliefs, opinions, ideas. We ask, what am I believing? Is this really true? And what's that based on? Is it based on our experience? Or do we do not know? And we know it's not the belief or the opinion or the idea that's at all a problem. It's finding the identity in our point of view. And then to be attached to that point of view, becoming a rock in a fluid world. I speak about this a lot, the fluidity. Yesterday in Bhutto, we had to just like bobble a lot, like shake, because she was saying like, we're mostly water. So she's just like, you want to shake your, keep, just like keep shaking your water. I like that. To like not hold the hold tension, remember that we're mostly water, and keep shaking. So we did a lot of that. It's great. Now we know life's fluid, it's moving, it's changing, but we forget. So do it with your body. Okay? Shake your water. And if we didn't derive identity through ideas, beliefs, opinions, and point of view, then we would be fluid. We'd be natural in a unified state with all the differences. And of all the teachings of the Buddha, the Kalama Sutra is one of my favorites precisely because it encourages this deep inquiry into beliefs. It's one of my favorite sutras in that way. And what it's saying in this sutra was relevant then, and it's alive today, just like a Zen brushstroke. It has no time to it. You can look at it at any time and it's relevant. That's most of the Buddhist teachings, really. Because sometimes this sutra is this incredible advice to question authority, histories that we've been taught, the teachings, and rely on ourself, which is difficult. And there's a piece in there we have to also need be careful about because our mind isn't always accurate. Bhikkhu Bodhi wrote, in most religions, the authority of God or a prophet as revealed in scripture and interpreted by religious institutions is the arbiter of what is true. Buddhism presents this great challenge. We are the arbiters of what is true. However, that doesn't mean that we can choose to believe whatever we like. So what does he mean by that? Because this, I wanted to point that out because the sutra is often misinterpreted. Because we can believe our ideas, as I said, and our mind is corrupt sometimes. I'm not in a harsh way. I told you my great joke about that, which I'll repeat one more time, that going to your mind for all the answers is like asking a corrupt police department to investigate itself. Can't do it. So we have to get answers from other places within us. Buddha provides examples in the sutra and a framework that we as practitioners can test teachings and judge their accuracy. So it's a really important sutra. He inspires this faith to inquire and doubt and wonder. He highlights the courage to doubt, the faith to doubt, and to not know as the place of rest, to not know as a place of rest. And in Buddhism, and at least in my life and perhaps yours, we're not infused with this spirit of this sutta, a spirit of questioning, of critical examination, of deep inquiry. And I'm not sure if I would be on this path if that wasn't encouraged, actually. So here's the sutra. The Buddha and several of his monks traveled through the Kosala country and entered the town of the Kalama people called Kesaputta. The Kalama people told the Buddha that many monks and Brahmins had come to Kesaputta before him. Each of these religious people had expounded their own doctrines and reviled the doctrines of others. "Venerable sir," they asked the Buddha, "which of these reverend monks and Brahmins spoke the truth and which is falsehood?" Here the Buddha gave one of his most widely quoted teachings. "Of course you are," and listen to the skill of the Buddha. Like, he doesn't, there's no ego here. He's teaching from a non-dual place. "Of course you are uncertain, Kalamas," because he knows this. "Of course you are in doubt. When there are reasons for doubt, uncertainty is born." So in this case, Kalamas, don't go by reports, by legends, by traditions, by scripture, by logical conjecture, by inference, by analogies, by agreement, through pondering views of probability, or by the thought, "This contemplative is our teacher." When you know for yourselves these qualities are unskillful, these qualities are blameworthy, these qualities are criticized by the wise, these qualities, when adopted and carried out, lead to harm and to suffering, then you should abandon them. Abandon them. By the same token, when you know for yourselves these qualities are skillful, these qualities are blameless, these qualities are praised by the wise, these qualities, when adopted and carried out, lead to welfare, to happiness, then you should remain. You should enter into them. By gently asking them questions, the Buddha guided the Kalamas to understand teachings based in greed, anger, and delusion are unskillful. By applying these criteria, we can understand truth from falsehood. Buddha said it is like a doctor who pointed at, Buddha said he is like a doctor who pointed out a medicine for pain and suffering. The foolish store this medicine without using it or ever tasting it. They prefer to read the label and marvel at it. Like this stuff. Buddha said, "My teaching is not for them. My teaching is for people who test the Dharma." He also said, "One who sees me sees the Dharma. One who sees the Dharma sees me." So that's the Kalama Sutta. So it's not very different from our situation today, as you can see. We too are inundated in different kinds of markets that are full, especially spiritual markets. Lots of possibilities. You're interested in religion? Well, what kind? Buddhism? What flavor? Tibetan? There's 17 flavors. Theravadin, Vipassana, Zen. So we have this swirling marketplace of spirituality. So it's no wonder we're confused. And what I love about the Buddha is in the sutra, he didn't say, "So come follow me. I've got it." No, he led them to inquiry, to ask themselves, and gave them the criteria. A swirl of so many offerings and causes to support. Just like the Kalamas, we're confused. We get confused. because they too are a skeptical, reasonable bunch, like us. Quite alive to spiritual matters, but overrun with teachers and teachings. Each competing for audience, each putting forth a different path, different instructions, different ways to practice were offered. And they became confused about what's true, what's worth doing, overwhelmed by all the claims to exclusive truth. And I find their skepticism so admirable. I'm not that way. So when I see someone that has that kind of feeling, I find it very admirable. I tend to gravitate toward people that fight a lot. You know, they're skeptics. I just love how their mind is. So much doubt. You know, I'm a faith person a lot, like especially in Zazen. That's where I have great faith. But I'm not one of those, how come this? How come, you know? And sometimes you see it as a kid, it starts and it's shut down. The ones that, how come this? How come that? What about this? What about that? How do we handle that as a parent without shutting it down, that inquiry? Because it's so beautiful. And sometimes we get annoyed with it, you know? Well, it can be. I'm not a parent, but I got you guys. So sort of. So when the Buddha arrived, despite his reputation as a great sage, they were concerned that he would just be one more teacher competing for a point of view. And of course, the history of our world reveals that we are drawn to those who provide a strong, uncompromising teaching, even if it's harmful sometimes. There's this confidence and this charisma that we're drawn to, even though something inside of us is saying something is off here. We see it again and again, and we may recognize it in ourselves more and more, which is good. That's inquiry, taking care. We are drawn to someone who says, this is it, and everyone else is wrong. Has no idea what they're talking about. And of course, certainly this is being played out in the political arena. But also we see this, and I wrote the word abuse, because I feel that's the word in spiritual arenas. And it makes me wonder, maybe you too, do we really want freedom? Do we really want liberation? Do we really want for the people, for the goodness? Can we handle the responsibility? Or do we prefer to have someone to give us the answers and not do the hard work ourselves? I recognize that, and I work with that in my practice. Because there's sometimes tell me what to do. Just tell me what to do. And sometimes that's necessary. I say that to Sean, just tell me what to do. I need help right now. Tell me what to do. But she knows I'm working with it. I would often grasp at the first things that made me feel better. Because that's what we're looking for. But truth, our truth may not make us feel better. But in the long, deeper run, it will. It has that appearance at first. And sometimes that's a good sign that it's not making us feel better, because that's the medicine. It's not buying into the feel better. So we have to question that, what that is. Some truths are beautiful. Some are shocking. We know this. But a great vitality and energy will come when it's the real thing. Because what is real is charged with life-giving power. And when I first showed up at Zen Mountain Monastery, at the front door, I remember walking in, nobody said, you know, can you just park your intelligence right here before you enter. You know, leave it at the front door. Mm-mm. So don't leave your intelligence at the front door. But also we might intuit that this is going to take time and effort to explore. And there has to be enough evidence in staying. Because if we have a question, we also have the answer. And it will find its way into insight. So whatever the inquiry is, we also have the answer. And it just takes time sometimes till that comes into insight. To keep it in our mind, as Dylan says, and not forget. Insights happen often, and this gives us faith to continue. And Dogen speaks of whole faith-like body. Have faith in your zazen, even without knowing, and question everything. Body, mind are exactly faith. You and zazen, you're chanting, you walking. We don't know who is sitting and what is going on or what should be known by whom. Complete trust through body and mind that we will know exactly what to trust. So the word faith from Pali, you might have heard, is sadha, S-A-D-D-H-A. And it means to place the heart upon something, to give our hearts over to. So how do we know what to give our hearts over to so we don't waver? How can we be definite? How do we know if this will work? What do we trust? So we're explorers. That's what we're, be an explorer, okay? Get the inquiry going. See what the exploration brings up. If the exploration is sustained, then a commitment is made. Because deep commitment to such an exploration will become necessary. Explorers know they have to continue their exploration when they glimpse something they have never seen before. So we know we can go a little further. And I liked what Jack Kornfield wrote in A Path with Heart. It was funny, they made a typo and they wrote Path Without a Heart. I don't know if you caught that, but on his book. Oops. Spiritual transformation, he says, is a profound process that doesn't happen by accident. We need a repeated discipline, a genuine training in order to let go of old habits of mind and sustain a new way of seeing. To mature on the spiritual path, we need to commit ourselves in a systematic way. With commitment, working through doubt and discouragement, we drill deeper and deeper into Dharma, into ourselves. The sampling approach is like digging a 1-foot well instead of a 20-foot well. You don't get beneath the surface. We all have choices, though, what we want to do. So faith evolves through our own understanding, our faith to inquire and doubt. And of course, with the levels of communication we have, faith is a very elusive, slippery, questionable commodity. There seems to be a great deal of energy putting into keeping us away from feeling what we feel when we smell something that's off. No, don't access your wisdom and question things. To me, it often feels like there's a force to believe something expressed by others that seems to be true. I don't know if you feel this, like even if it's about cold remedies or sneakers, there's some message that we're lacking something very important with such energy behind it that you really feel like if you don't have this cold remedy, you're like out of it. Or these sneakers. And I sometimes I get this thing in me. I want this thing, and I don't know where that's coming from. And then I stop and I go like, "What? This is insane. Why are you online now ordering something you don't want?" And I feel like if I don't have it, I'm going to be a fossil out of it. Like, we don't know what's best is the message for ourselves. So practicing the Buddha Dharma, sitting down here, doesn't mean we're going to be infused with the spirit of inquiry. Although this is what is encouraged and this is what is taught. And as I said, if you practice honestly and with integrity, that will happen. That will happen. Or something will happen that will make that happen. Will rupture in some way. So the question comes up. Because that's how nature works. That's who we are. We are full of wonder. We are full of questioning. We are infused with that spirit. Of course you are uncertain, Kalamas. Of course you are in doubt. When there are reasons for doubt, uncertainty is born. When you know for yourself, these qualities are unskillful, these qualities are blameful, these qualities are criticized by the wise, these qualities, when adapted and carried out, lead to harm and suffering, then you should abandon them. This kind of doubt is positive and healthy. It's an edge of an investigation that says, I'm not going to accept this just because someone else says it's so. I really want to know. And that's the cutting edge of our wisdom, the voice that says, I want to know for myself. And sometimes doubt on the other side can remove us, can be an excuse to remove ourselves from a situation and not put something into practice. So think about that. That our doubt makes us then stand back and judge and analyze and not commit ourselves to take a risk, not to see what happens if we practice. We may feel power standing apart, but it's not a strong strength. It's more of a protection. It's the power of a conceit and an indulgency, and it's short-lived. It won't last long, that kind of doubt. It actually doesn't sustain us or give us confidence to discover what's true for ourselves. It's more a process of intellectualization, not the direct experience the Buddha is encouraging. Buddha's response to the Kalamas, in effect, put it into practice. This is how we know, direct experience. And I remember this little story from China. It was a Chinese teaching story, which I thought was addressing this. People came from far and wide to hear Dharma talks of a young teacher. Apparently, they had some depth. And one day, an old master came to hear them. He sat in the back of the meditation hall while the young teacher was giving a Dharma talk. But the young teacher saw him and, out of respect, knowing that he was a renowned teacher and much older, said, "Please come up here and sit next to me while I give my talk." I think that's pretty courageous. So the old master rose and got up and sat next to him. It's like, "Here, Shugen's here. Oh, here, have a seat next to me, right? While I give my talk," which he usually does. So the master rose and sat next to him, and the young teacher resumed his talk, and every other word was a quotation from a different sutra or Zen master. And the old master started to nod off in front of everyone. And the young teacher could see this out of the corner of his eye, but he just continued. The more authorities he cited, the sleepier the old master became. Finally, the young teacher couldn't stand it anymore, so he asked, "What's wrong? Is my teaching so boring, so awful, so totally off?" And at that point, the old master leaned over and gave him a very hard pinch, and the young teacher screamed, "Ouch!" And the old master said, "Ah, That's what I've come all this way for. The pure teaching. The ouch. Yeah. So that's what the Buddha is saying in his response to the Kalamas. This direct experience he's trying to emphasize. He sees that we rely upon many different modes of authority. Internal, inner, external. Some reliable, some way off the mark. So how do we tell which is which? How do we balance inner authority with external authority? The Buddha tells the Kalamas and us here, sitting here today, about what we turn for authority in terms of knowing how to act. Buddha is not saying in the sutra, these ancient teachings, these traditional teachings are irrelevant, or that we have to reinvent the Dharma every time we think. He's not saying we don't need guidance of teachers or not to read scriptures. How would we find out what's praised or pointed out as unskillful by the wise? No, he's saying don't give final authority to these things. Don't give final authority to your own ideas. Test your teachings. Test the teachings. Test your ideas in the laboratory of your actions. Come, Kalamas. Don't go by reports, legends, scripture, logical conjecture, inference, analogies, by consistency with your own views. Don't believe anything just because I say it or some worthy being says it. Don't believe anything because it's held to be traditionally true. Traditions are not to be followed simply because they are traditions. Don't believe anything because you've read it. Believe it because it's the truth from your own experience. Do you find that their particular meditation or spiritual practice leads to a diminishing of greed, desire in your mind? Then you can trust this. A diminishing of anger, hatred, and fear in your mind, you can trust this. You find it leads to clarity. There's less delusion, less feeling of being cut off and disconnected. You can trust this. We simply really put something to the test. We grapple. And when we do that, you will find you're stretched. That's part of it. If you don't feel stretched, it might not be worthwhile. Just some stretch. Ruptured, dislodged, inspired, emotionally and intellectually nourished, and satisfied to hear the teachings, but to not stop there, to explore and really feel the benefit. We have to let it stretch our lived experience. Feel the squeeze so our good juices pop out. Hold it up to scrutiny. Let it hold us up to scrutiny. And in the end, the ball's always in our court. As Buddha said, be a lamp unto yourself. So what is the test of truth? The Buddha offers a simple formula. This simple formula. Test things in terms of cause and effect in our actions. Let the questions light the way. Let a question in our nerves be lit. So he's talking about testing it in terms of cause and effect. What he spoke of, whatever is skillful, leading to harm and ill, go. What is skillful, leading to happiness and peace, pursue it. Apply the test of skillfulness to all the teachings in your actions. And then see, where is the teaching taking you? Is it moving you in the direction that is wise and kind? And as I said, one quick test isn't enough to know. You sit one period, okay, am I wiser and kinder? You'll feel it. But it'll take some time. We have to keep at it. So our sensitivity to the results of our actions grows more and more refined with practice. And when we've done the hard work of asking these questions, we can decide for ourselves whether a teaching or a teacher is worth following. What actions to take as a bodhisattva citizen? Inquiry is an expression of deep care. At the same time, we've also entered the creative process. The pleasure of teaching ourselves how to live. A learning that brings joy and peace and insight because we taught ourselves. What a great pleasure to learn through our inquiry. And then the energy to go even more deeper, becoming more fully our natural self. And then to give it away. Keep giving it away. It's all right, Ma. I'm only bleeding. Question in your nerves is lit. You know there is no answer fit. To satisfy, ensure you not to quit. To keep it in your mind and not forget that it is not he or she or them or it that you belong to. Thank you. May your life go well.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.